Hello and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 136 and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
I love the way you say hello every week, Dan. And the favourite biscuit in everyone's box, it's Tony Esmond.
You might literally made it up a second ago because you said, "Oh, I don't know what I'm going to say when you are now." Because you're talking to our guests, you've got an American accent going on before we came on.
I have not got an American accent. But our guest this week, yes, is from the US. We're joined by an artist who we're big fans of on this show.
Yep.
I've been wanting to talk to him for a while. We've mentioned titles like Boo Hag and The Cabinet before. And if you follow him on Twitter, which is @treebeard, which is one of the best Twitter names ever.
Yes.
You know that his commissions and his pinups are absolutely magnificent.
Yep.
So it is our pleasure to welcome to the Thunderdome Mr. Kelly Williams to the show. Hello, Kelly.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, Kelly. You're right, man.
Hello, Kelly.
Good. This is where we pretend we haven't met before we started recording.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
That's how
it works. Well, it is. It's wonderful to meet you. All of you.
And it's wonderful for you to be here, Kelly.
We're very excited.
It started so well. It started so polite and sort of generous. And as it goes on, it could go either way. But no, we're going to be talking about lots of different things this week. Just general comic talk and comic art process. I'm very intrigued to see some of Kelly's art process, actually, seeing some of the stuff he puts on social media. And I know he's a big fan of like horror monsters and stuff in general. And I know some of the monsters he likes are very close to Tony's heart. We're going to get...
I've got one on my desk in front of me.
What? A monster?
Monster, yeah.
Oh,
not like that. Disgusting.
Right. Oh, I wasn't thinking like that. Boy, that's disgraceful.
For a change.
Yeah. I'll tell you what is disgusting, though, and that's the amazing amount of titles that you can get on Comic House.
Well done, you.
Thanks. Yes, thank you very much to Comic House, our friends who sponsor this show every week, put up with our terrible sponsorship ads, and do the best they can for the world of indie comics, especially in the UK and beyond. So if you go to comichouse.com, you'll find a huge library of comics you can order printed copies from. If you'd like to read your books digitally, then you can sign up to the Comic House app, which is absolutely essential reading. I know there's a few that I'm looking forward to checking out there. They're always updating it all the time. And Dan's going to tell us a few titles that you can check out.
Oh, yeah. The new bit for this bit is Dan's going to talk about it.
Fanzine.
Yay! We're in that.
Yeah, it was sort of umming and ahhing whether that was going to get uploaded to Comic House, but it's on there now. Make sure you've got lots of space on your device, because that's a meaty mother.
390 pages, I think, it came out at the end, didn't it?
Jesus.
Yeah. That's so
epic.
Yeah, that's an epic.
Ain't worth reading, because I wrote it, but the rest is good.
Yeah.
We've got The Blue Flame by Reese Finlay, uploaded on there. Grave Horticulture, issue 1 by Paul John Milne. And I think it's Ad McRitchie, Finnis. I'm not quite sure which part of that's the name. And Comic House recommends Robin by Simon Berkson. That's a great title. That's a really good one. And also The Last Sheriff, issue 1.
Yes.
Which is a great, nice, fun, kinetic action series to get jumping into. I'm going to be downloading the fanzine one. And,
amazing.
Giving that a read.
The sweat and tears that went into that from David, our previous guest. That is there's some great articles from people in that talking about sort of fandom in the UK. Just like gorgeous art as well. Really good. Yeah.
Amazing.
Look forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
So speaking of Reckless Heroes as well, have you seen Vander's work this week? The stuff he's putting out. Hell, he has stepped up again.
Good old Brian Vander.
Yeah. Gorgeous stuff on there.
Are we being nice to him this week?
I know. He'll get his revenge.
Same with there's so many people though, like seeing their stuff on Instagram, and people keep on pushing the craft. It's really inspiring.
Yeah
it really is.
Kelly, do you have an Instagram?
Yes, he does. I follow it.
Yes, I do. And he follows it.
Do you post process videos and things like that? I noticed that a lot of people do that these days.
Most of what you see on Twitter is you see it on Instagram too.
Yeah.
I
It's like, I think I have an Instagram just because everybody has Instagram. I prefer the format to Twitter, but it's like another social media thing that I have to mess with. So
yeah, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and I wish I had an interesting enough life to fill three things.
Tony, your life is very.
You don't have to, because like I said, it's. I mean, I post the same thing on all three things.
It's like a social media echo, basically.
I do forget that sometimes about Instagram. Absolutely. I was like, oh, I haven't been on that for a fucking week. I better put something on.
Yeah, I'll get like loads of notifications from you. Well, he's liked eight things or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, we need to get back on it now that the podcast actually has an Instagram.
We've got one, haven't we, as a podcast. Yeah. That's going to get sexy.
What we also have is the Comic House app. So if you...
Oh, yeah, we're back to that again. Sorry.
Yeah, we're back to that again. Yeah, I'll finish this off. I'm going to earn the money that they gave us. No, but literally, if you like all those sites we talked about, if you download the app, you get a 14-day free trial. And then for only £3 a month, you get access to all of the Comic House comics that are available digitally, which is amazing. And fantastic for like reviewers and people like us. And so go to comichouse.com and find out more today. And as
always, stuff that's going on there seems to have speeded up a bit, actually. There's more and more going on there, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, more and more every day.
I thought that would happen once the kind of the app sort of gained a bit of...
Established,
It's because of us, you know.
Oh, it's down to us. Yeah. It's all down to us.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah, they're going to be popular despite everything we do.
Indeed.
But back to the like Instagram and stuff, because I think this is a good way to start the general comics art talk.
Yeah.
Because I know Kelly he posts a lot of great artwork on Twitter, as well as some fantastic pictures of you with your cat, which I can appreciate.
He's a good cat. He's a good kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the author image that you posted up not too long ago. It was amazing. Now, your style of artwork, you do all original. You don't work digitally, do you? It's all original.
Well, I do some digital, but
oh, really?
Mostly it's traditional and stuff. Like, Metaphase. I drew that like 100% digitally. Like, yeah. I didn't draw any of that, like, on paper. It shows. I do most of my layouts digitally, and then I print them out and either lightbox them or just ink right over.
Oh, right.
I like the digital tool set for that, because I don't know why. I think maybe it's a mental thing, but it seems like it just goes faster. And I hate the penciling part. Like, if I actually pencil something, it's a mess and loose. I just need to get shapes in place, because I don't know. I just don't enjoy that part as much. But I think it's a mental thing, though, because you don't have to worry about erasing so much, because you can just undo it. Or even if you erase, it's completely gone. You don't have little ghost marks and stuff. I think because you don't have to worry about that maybe you kind of trick yourself into not worrying about it so much, so you can go a little looser, a little faster. And at least I think that's what I do. There's something to be said about like, oh, I drew this too big. Well, I guess I'll just resize it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of, oh, I drew this too big. I got to start over.
Yeah. Yeah, Photoshop's great for fixing those messes. Certainly, I've yet to try out digital and things like that, but that's one of the things the freedom to make more mistakes in some way. And I make if you've seen more some of my pages, there's enough mistakes anyway. But at least with Photoshop, they'll be easier to correct. Because certainly, I mean, I work all on 11x17 sort of like blue line paper, so I have original pages. But there has been times where, like, I've had to completely redraw a panel, scan it in separately, and then replace it in Photoshop. Now, I've seen a lot of your pages, which are very much there's like watercolors and ink washes and things like that going on, isn't there? Have you experienced any of those sort of mishaps that you've had to fix digitally later?
Yep. I've definitely had to. Well, for one, I mean, I've there's lots of pages that I've had to go in and I guess go back and redraw a panel and then scan it and replace it digitally.
Hmm.
I kind of stubborn that way. So like if left to my own devices and it's something that's just me and I'm not, you know, like no editors or whatever, there's a lot less of that happening probably, but, I've had a couple, you know, I did some work in the Boom, WWE comics a few months back.
Oh, nice.
And there was a couple pages in those that, because, you know, this is like a licensed thing, so they want the likenesses to be, you know, I guess, right, you know.
Yeah.
For some reason. There was a page that I actually, like, I have a stack of the same panel drawn over and over and over again. Because I couldn't get it right. And then when I finally did, I just dropped it in digitally and, you know, that part was real easy.
For those sort of jobs, you're working for someone else with someone else's character. Do you find that you're a little less strict with yourself when it's your own work, such as like Boo Hag, which is all you?
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, my first thought is yes, I don't give a fuck and I'll just do whatever when it's me. But I guess that's not really true. It's just that, like Boo Hag, for instance, is something that that was a full, like, I had complete control because I wrote it and everything. So. I think there was a little less pressure going in because, I mean, you know, I did this, I made it up, I wrote it, whatever. So I already knew what I wanted it to be going in. And there was two things about, like, something like Boo Hag was, like, there was a page I actually completely redrew because after I did it, I realized, like, flow-wise, it just didn't work like I thought it would. And and then Boo Hag was actually supposed to be two pages longer originally, and I ended up cutting it down more because I felt like the other pages were just filler and they didn't really serve a purpose. And my whole point with those stories is to try to, like, just to, you know, not try to tell these, like, super complex stories or whatever, but just to, like, tell a quick scary story that's like it gets to the point and there's not a ton of self-indulgent
that to me could have been a story out of Creepy or Eerie. It's that sort of length, right, and yeah, tone, and yeah, I can,
yeah,
see where
totally
you're going with that.
The idea behind everything in that series is to just be standalone stories in that vein. Originally the plan was that I would continue doing those stories the same way I did Boo Hag, where it's just me. Like, every couple, few months, I would do this one scary story, and it would be a short story that I could print out as, like, a mini comic and stuff. And but then I got busy and realized that I had all these writer friends that we'd been talking about doing stuff together forever, but nobody ever... We just never had the time that lined up for it. But doing, like, an 8-page story thing, you know, that's a little easier to try to make work. What it turned into after Boo Hag.
Okay.
So what's your time process like for something like Boo Hag? Because do you find that, like, when you put your nose to the grindstone, you can churn out a page quite quickly? Or, you know, some people take a long time with each page, you know, very meticulous. What's your time scale like?
It depends, you know. Some obviously some pages take longer than other pages. I work kind of fast if I can get rid of, if I'm left to my own devices without distractions. I can be really fast, but I'm also very easily distracted. So.
Yeah.
So it can kind of even out. But Boohag, I think I was writing and drawing that. Well, no, I wrote like a little outline for it way off and way before I ever started drawing it. But like when I did start to put it together and start drawing it, I did that like in a week. But that was like because I was also having to draw like something else too.
For people who don't know, Kelly, what's Boohag about? I know we mentioned it a few times. Did you want to just explain it quickly? Because it is available on Comixology as well, isn't it? I think you can get it on there as well.
It is, yeah. Along with Howl, the whole The Dark series is like what it's under.
Yeah.
For the digital stuff for Alterna. But Boohag's essentially a story about a guy writing a book about urban legends, folklore, stuff like that. And he goes to Fouke, Arkansas, which I live in Arkansas, so that's part of it. Fouke, Arkansas is where the creature from Boggy Lake. That movie, like it's based in Fouke, Arkansas. Like that all happened in that area.
Okay.
And because it's actually called like the Fouke Monster or whatever, but it's essentially just a Bigfoot story.
Yeah, sort of in the woods, isn't it? Almost sort of.
Do what?
In the woods, you know, sort of in the deep woods, sort of thing. Yeah, yeah.
It reminded me a bit of the hag creature out of Legend. Have you seen the Ridley Scott, Tom Cruise?
Meg Mucklebones.
That's the one. Yeah. Terrifying as a kid, that creature.
Absolute. And to be fair, like it was kind of falling back in love with that character that got me stuck on my whole goal of like doing a bunch of new witch stories and stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyways, when this guy goes to meet up with this guy who supposedly knows some secrets about the legend or whatever, he gets there, they meet up and they go into the woods, and then you know he finds something different, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
but, yeah. The classic horror trope, he finds out more than he ever expected.
I guess goal with these, you know, it wasn't going in, but by the time I was done with Boohag, I wanted to try to do it where all of the stories had like the only real common thread that they had was that, other than being like short horror stories, is that they in some way take existing legends and try to make something new out of it. So like with Boohag, it's you know, I use this legend about a Bigfoot thing that happened in the 60s or 70s or whatever in Arkansas, and then also borrowed from the legends of Boo Witches, which is a wonderful, just heartwarming story about a witch that wears people's skin and
yes,
nice.
Yeah, that's particularly
or the whole
creepy
idea
that,
like,
but yeah,
the I think the biggest and most interesting thing, you know, about that legend is that so you know, like the whole thing with people that wake up with like sleep paralysis and stuff.
Yeah,
You know, they're awake but they can't move, they can't scream, they can't do anything. Like and a lot of them will talk about like shadow figures and stuff. Like part of the Boo Witch legends are it's that, like she's sitting on your chest and you can't breathe, and she's like basically stealing your breath or stealing your essence or whatever. And then, and if you're lucky, she steals your skin. And
if
and
you're
then,
lucky,
like,
you're
you know, I don't know. I mean, you're kind of screwed either way, right? Yeah. So you might as well go out in style. But but and then, like, I think the only way to I don't remember if it's like to get your skin back, because I'm assuming at this point it's not really an issue for you, but like it's either to get your skin back or just to destroy her or whatever. It's something crazy, like you have to find where she hangs her skin and sprinkle salt in it before the sun comes up.
Fucking hell.
What and then it? She usually like hides her skin in a tree or something. It's like, yeah, it's kooky.
Like old folk tales and things like that, what the hell were they smoking? Because like, they have the most random and weird sort of... I mean, I suppose that's just imagination at its finest. Either that or the mushrooms are really good. But it's just...
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like what I just like told you about is like, it's essentially like it's sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
Nightmares. Yeah. But like, you know, back when this stuff was... you know, they didn't...
They needed a way to rationalize it, didn't they? Because otherwise it was...
If you live in the deep, dark woods and in a new, like, area that, you know, you're colonizing or whatever, what have you, it's as weird as it is, like, it's probably easier to just be like, I don't know what that is. It scared the shit out of me. It must be a witch that wears people's skin and steals their breath.
Yeah, it was those sort of olden tales, like they always fascinate me now. Like I listen to some podcasts about like witchcraft, and eventually it goes into the dark realms of how they treated people they thought were witches. But my mind always goes to like the story possibilities of like, oh, if this was actually real, that would make a really creepy story.
Oh yeah.
So
plus we're opening our minds up to the folk tales from other places, aren't we? Like when you look at like Elboy and stuff like that. Yeah. We haven't heard about that stuff in England. We've only really got our own stuff, haven't we, you know?
It's interesting that there's sometimes, like, cultures seem to gravitate towards one thing. So where, like, there'd be a myth of something on the other side of the world, there'd be something that's not too dissimilar.
Yeah.
And like, it's strange that kind of cultures always sort of seem to have that, like, that fear or something that they all sort of recognise and tap into.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's like vampires. Like, you know, the Chinese tales of vampires are wildly different to what the Eastern European ones are. You know, and I always find that fascinating. When you've got like a book on sort of different vampire lore and stuff, which I do, but you know, you kind of like, if you wanted to write a story like, about something like that, you can pick and choose from different ones. Because some of them, I think there was one vampire tale that they cannot attack you if you throw rice in front of them. What's that?
I've heard about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that's why I always keep rice in my pocket.
Or it's the, like, if you throw it on the ground, they have to stop and count it, which gives you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always worried that you have to get married if that happens. But I think it's the thing.
No, you use the rice after you get married.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Go on. Stupid point. What if you threw down a microwave packet? Would they have to open it, obliged to open it, or they just.
It doesn't count. Of Uncle Ben's. This isn't working.
You had some of that at work the other day. You told me it was like eating an old chew.
Yeah, it was. It was fucking disgusting.
You didn't microwave it long enough. we talk about important subjects. So. Like with Boohag and Howl and stuff, so obviously, like the other work, the commission work and the sequential work that you're doing for other writers, I'm guessing that the series of The Dark Tales is always on your mind, and you will pick up again one day. How many in total do you think you've got ideas and notes for?
Well, it's kind of open ended and indefinite at the moment. I have. I've kind of broke it up into what I see for, like, I guess the first volume, so to speak. With Alterna, like, the idea is that they're doing the digital distribution for the titles, and then once I've hit like, you know, 8 or 10 stories, we'll probably try to do like a print collection that has them all collected. So,
okay, and then that'd be nice. Yeah,
that's not necessarily the end of it, but it gives a nice tying it up, so that, you know, if I don't want to do anymore, or if I want to change how I do it, whatever. But but as the rest of this goes, like, from Howl on, I'll be working with a different writer each time.
Yeah.
And but, you know, it's still much the same thing. It's still very, like, you know, we're both involved in how it comes together and everything. And
is that because you prefer to work with a writer rather than write for yourself?
Not necessarily. It's more of a, it was born more out of a time thing. Mm. Like, it was just easier for me to, well, it was two things. It was easier for me time-wise because part of the reason why there hasn't been a new one in so long, even with somebody writing, is I just haven't been able to carve out the time to draw it. But and the other part is, like I said before, there's a lot of writer friends that we've talked about doing stuff together and nothing lines up. But then also, after Blue Hag came out and everything, and I sent it around to people, like, I had a ton of people asking, you know, hey, if you want to, you know, if you need anybody to write one or something like that.
Yeah.
And at first I wasn't interested in doing that, but then, the more I thought about it, the fact that it's a good excuse to work with friends and stuff, I was like, yeah, okay, you know. Plus, I mean, like, Phil Hester said he wants to do one and stuff, so I'm like, well, I'm not going to say amazing. No, right? You know?
Yeah, and he's been responsible for some, like, really dark and, like, quite emotional stories, like some of the, you know, some of my favorite books of Phil Hester written stuff.
And I mean, and not just him. I mean, like, there's, I think I have a list of like 10 people. It's just a matter of
schedules and lining things
if
up.
If everybody stays on or is interested still by the time the next one comes about.
I don't think it's any secret, Kelly, is that we've been talking about it for a couple of years. That your dance card must be full now, mate. I've got to tell you, because you know, you've very much seen as, you know, the hot thing at the moment, aren't you? Really, there must be writers who are looking to do series with you, left, right, and center, aren't
there? I don't agree with you. I mean, sure, there's more opportunities now than there were, say, 2 or 3 years ago. But I mean, there's also still, it's great that people are interested, and I do get a lot of writers and stuff that contact me, and. Mm. Some really great ideas, you know, some maybe not so much, but it starts to turn into like, you know, who has money and, you know, that kind of thing too, which I hate that's kind of, because when
you get paid for it, dude, didn't you? It's your living, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So
it is, and I always I still have a hard time with that because I feel bad about it, you know.
so here, you heard it. Yeah, you can guilt Kelly into doing artwork for you anytime.
It has certainly happened once or twice.
I mean, I think before you came on, you ran through. We were chatting before we started recording about some of the work you got coming up. Is there anything? So what's the schedule like at the moment for you? You must have, and we know you've got a long list. What you excited about that you're working on at the moment?
Well, I got the doing that frolic with Colin Bunn. That it's a little different in the way that we're the way it'll be distributed and the way we're doing it. It's actually starting as a kind of like a half page. I'm not real sure what the schedule will be, but I'll say a week. On Colin's Patreon. So okay. I think it's if you back his Patreon at like the $3 range or something like that, like it you get access to those comics. And yeah, so I'm basically, I'm drawing like normal size pages, like 11 by 17. But the way everything's written and laid out, it's broke down into two. So that's basically two pages. It's like two comic strips, yeah. You know, let's say.
How did that come about? Because Colin's obviously, I mean, he's a big Marvel writer, isn't he? You know, how did you luck or well, you didn't luck into it, but how did that happen?
He writes for Marvel? I didn't know.
Get off. I've seen that. Yeah.
Kyle Strom, who draws like Spread and co-creator of Spread and stuff.
Okay.
He put us in contact or suggested me to call in for this. So yeah, I guess that was Kyle. I don't know. Yeah. But
a little summary as well of what the sort of, you know, perhaps why he chose you for it or.
Oh, I. Because I'm good. I don't know.
Yeah. Did he guilt you into it? That's what we want to know.
What was that?
Did he guilt you into it?
Did he guilt me into it? No. I was actually pretty. I was pretty stoked about it. I mean, I'm a fan of Cullen's work, so the opportunity to work with him was definitely, you know, exciting. But when he, admittedly, when he told me what it was he wanted to do, like format wise, and how I had reservations for a moment because,
okay,
you know, I mean, it's something different. So I was a little not sure, but as we talked about it and he gave me kind of a rundown of what it was he wanted to do, what the story was, he basically sold me on it pretty easily when he told me it was kind of like a mix of Phantasm 2 and Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Oh, cool. My God. Get me in.
And it was pretty hilarious too because I had literally like just been talking to my wife like maybe a week before I got that email about how I kind of wanted to do something in the vein of Something Wicked This Way Comes. So It all just kind of fell into place at the right time, I guess.
Amazing. So when you had those sort of reservations, well, I mean, there were small reservations. Was it because, certainly, like, when I've had a script, sometimes I look at it and I think, I like this, but can I possibly do it? You know, is this going to be right for me? Is it possible for my style to fit with this? Are those the sort of thoughts that you had?
Maybe more so now than I used to. Used to be, I don't know that I thought about that very much. Like, if I saw a script and I was like, you know, this is pretty good, okay. And then when I'd sit down to start drawing it, it would just be months of stressing out about, I can't do this.
Is that something that you had with, I know that The Cabinet, which is obviously an earlier work of yours, but that's a historical sort of horror drama with different, you know, there's so much going on with like old boats and ships. Was that something that, you know, when you have to do that stuff, it was quite daunting to get into it?
Yes. Actually, I was too stupid to be intimidated by it at first. I was like, no, that sounds awesome. And then once it got into like the point where I had to do it, I was like, oh, this is stupid. I don't know. I think The Cabinet was kind of at the time that I was doing The Cabinet. I think I was just starting to kind of fall into myself as far as like how I draw and figuring that out. And so I was excited about what it was.
Yeah.
And I always just love working with Christian, and we're really good friends now. And I mean, there'll most likely always be something in the works from us. But working with Christian on that probably helped me stay really comfortable. And he was easy to work with on it. And,
you know, at the time, here's a fact. It was my first ever Kickstarter that I ever backed.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, that's all right. No, it's a great book. But I know certainly the updates with it, you had some health issues at the time, didn't you? It was bit of a did.
I
remember reading those and feeling so sorry for you.
Well, you know, in a way, you shouldn't feel too sorry for me.
I don't feel sorry anymore. Thanks.
Yeah, you never feel sorry about
us. I kind of did it to myself a little bit. Like, we actually, it's weird. Like, we haven't talked about it a ton. And it's not because I just, like, I don't want to. It's just it never really comes up. But, like, I ended up in the hospital with pancreatitis.
Oh, God.
And then, like, I'm diabetic. But I sometimes do okay with the, you know, do it being a diabetic. And sometimes, most of the time, probably not. And on top of all of that, I was a pretty heavy drinker. Like, you know, I drink a lot of beer. And so I think eventually that stuff all just caught up to me. And so, yeah, I ended up, for one thing, I didn't go to the hospital right away because we just thought I was, like, sick. And then it got to, like, some weird, I was puking up black stuff, like, you know, demon possession shit. So, like, I ended up in the hospital. And that is literally about all I remember, because I was in a drug-induced coma for, like, most of a month, like 2 or 3
weeks.
And that was because, and during that time, like, I guess a couple of times they thought I was pretty much done. Like, one time my wife was actually, she was telling me how she had been there and she was leaving to go home, and they called her to come back because they were like, eh, I don't know, it doesn't look good. Oh, and so, yeah, that's the hardest part for me, is like, what, you know, she had to go through. Because I don't remember, so, you know. I had it easy, really. I just had some weird dreams and stuff. But
people still moan about, like, Kickstarters, though, Kelly. We know you almost died, mate. But...
Well, no, at the end of the day, he went through all of that. I still got my book.
Still got your Kickstarter.
I still got my book, and I'm still waiting for other people to finish their books. That's all I'm going to say. I've just heard what this man went to go through, and I'm still waiting on other people. That's all I'm saying.
It was really, none of that actually happened. We just knew we were going to be late.
Just had to come off Twitter for a while.
That was the hardest part. Sitting in a room alone for months.
Yeah.
I did see you tweet about that the other day. Was it yesterday? You said, I haven't been out the house for ages, and now I've got to go to Emerald City Comic Con. He says, I don't know if I'm going to be able to cope. It is a sort of lovely job, isn't it, being an artist almost, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm already, like, I hate being around people. And
you and me both. Yeah.
The last couple of years, it has been, like, you know, because I've been busy, or I'm also just, I'm not ambitious to get out. I live in a small town, and there's not much of a reason to leave the house. Like, there's nothing here that I need to go do. And if I, the only out of the house I ever really do is going to the grocery store. And my daughter lives like 3 hours away, and we went, she wanted to come visit, so I went and got her on Friday. And she was at work when I got there, and I knew I had like 30 minutes to kill. So I was like, again, it's Arkansas, so it's not a ton to do. I just went and piddled around.
Just start up the old chainsaw, wander around. Is that how it works out there? Or?
That would have been, it could have led to that, actually. I went and piddled around in a Walmart.
Right.
As soon as I walked in, like, I don't know if it's just, you know, it was what you expect when you walk into a Walmart, and I just forgot, or if it felt like it was turned up to like 11, and I was like just super sensitive to like the crowd and the way everybody was.
Oh no, I know exactly what you mean. Like, sometimes I walk into a place and you hit a place at the right time, like it's super busy, or I don't know, that there's a sports match on and like the bar's really busy or something, and the first thing you think when you walk in is, oh, fuck this,
I'd rather be at home. Talking to my dog, that's all I want to do. I don't want to go to Asda. We have a supermarket chain over here called Asda, which I think is probably very similar to Walmart. And it's just full of trashy people, Kelly. Do you know what I mean?
It's just, oh, no, that's Walmart. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so when I was leaving, I was like, oh, my God, you know, like the last big crowd I was in was a show probably. And yeah. I haven't done a show in a couple months, so. You know, the first one I'm going to do is a huge one, and and I don't have the safety of, like, I have a table, you know, because, like, I can go hunker down behind a table and just be like, all right, you know, I can ignore you and it's fine. But I have to be like, I have to be fine and civil with people, because I'll be at, like, a different person's table, like at a publisher's booth, so I can't just be like, ah, leave me alone, you know.
So, yeah. You got to be seen to be smiley and happy at those places, haven't you?
Yeah.
You're with the people who pay you, I suppose. You know.
I don't. I mean, I hear that the thing people do. I don't. Some people might argue that that's not what I do, but I think I'm a nice guy. I'm a nice guy when I'm in these situations.
Well, we think you're a nice guy. You're we'll stick up for you.
Well, there you go.
Emerald City, isn't it? That's Emerald City you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a show you've done before, Kelly, or is it a good show to do, or would you recommend it to people to travel over to, or?
I don't fucking know. I'll tell you, I did it for the first time last year. I had a table, and I was super stoked about it. I love Seattle. I'm from Spokane, Washington, originally.
Right.
And I got there a couple days early. And me and Christian shared a table, and Christian was there even earlier than me with his wife. They took a early vacation out there, and then he stayed on, and we did the show. And he ended up getting the flu while he was there, and he got over it right before the show, and I ended up getting it at the beginning of the show. So it was pretty miserable in that respect, and Saturday was the worst day of it for me, and but I couldn't afford to not go to the show. I don't know, like I think it's a good show. I just had a bad experience. Personally a bad experience, but
and
like, it didn't make me not want to do it. Actually, it just made me really want to do the show again to try to do it right, you know.
And
then I didn't get in this year, and I was like, oh, that's shit, right?
Yeah. That's gotta be the worst, being hit by like a flu or something when a con comes up, because this absolutely debilitated. Like, you need to be like firing on all cylinders ready.
It was
awful. I when I woke up that Saturday morning, I was like, oh my god, I'm dying, I'm not gonna be able to go. And I, like, drug myself out and wandered down the street and found some medicine and came back to the hotel and laid down. And then I was like, nope, I can do it. And all day, off and on, it was like, I gotta go. No, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I gotta go.
Little burst of energy again. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, it's bad enough when you factor in the fact the last show we did, we were all hung over the following day, and you got to be smiley and happy and... You know, selling comics and stuff, but if you got the flu as well, you're totally fucked, aren't you? You know what I mean?
See, that's one thing that I don't like. I'm like, after all that medical stuff, like, you know, I quit drinking. It was
good, man.
Yeah. It was you know, it had to happen. So whatever, I was fine. I'm fine with it. It's fine. But like,
I don't miss it. Yeah,
when I didn't actually start really doing shows until immediately after that.
Okay.
And almost immediately, because it's still an issue for me, because, like, you know, the drinking was my social crutch. Like, I'm not a very outgoing guy, but I'd get drunk and you could shut me up. And like, I was worried about like that.
Yeah.
But almost immediately, being in the crowd and seeing, you know, being on the outside looking in of the drunkenness, I was like, I am kind of happy that at least this happened the way it did.
I'm, and, I, I'm on side with you around that, Kelly, because I used to be a bit of a drinker, and I don't really drink now. And people say to me, "Oh, people just sort of presume that you're an alcoholic when you turn down a drink at the bar in England." That's a bit what it's like here. And yeah. The fact is, I don't drink because I'm annoying at the best of times, man. if I ever drink and get drunk, I'm just a nightmare.
It's annoying with the brakes taken off.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of why.
I was a terrible person when I was drunk. I didn't do anything mean to people, but I was just obnoxious as fuck. So.
I think I'm funny as fuck when I'm drunk. I think that's my problem. Yeah. Just not funny to
I think I'm thing. Funny. That's the thing. Yeah. I think I'm funny even when I'm sober. I know nobody else thinks I'm funny at the time. If I think it's funny, that's fine.
Yeah.
But now when I'm drunk, that's turned up to unbearable volume. So the hangovers and not making a fucking fool of myself in public. I was very happy that I stopped drinking before I started doing shit.
The hangovers just get worse and worse.
Yeah.
The older you get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, fuck.
And they're sort of sweaty, airless places, convention halls, aren't they, at the best of times?
Yeah.
Just sweating it out behind a table,
So you're going to be at Emerald City, and obviously there's going to be quite a few creators there. I haven't looked at the guest list. It's one of those shows, one of the American shows, that I'd love to visit one day just to experience it.
Yeah.
Because it's a very comic-centric show from everything that I've heard.
It's a great show. It is.
Yeah. When you haven't got the flu.
When you don't have the flu. I guess I'll report back to you after I go this time.
We'll get the Kelly Williams report. Amazing. But are there any creators that you're going to sort of meet up, maybe sort of socially or network or talk about the stuff have you planned anything like that?
No. it's another thing. This is actually a trip that needs to be stuff like that because I'm not going to be there making money, so to speak, or whatever. Yeah. But there's a couple just friends that I'm hoping to meet up with while we're there, Ken Lowry. There's other people I don't know.
I know you did C2E2 last year as well, didn't you?
The last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, because I know we the reason I've got the two Dark mini comics is that you passed them on to Mark Lamming.
Yeah.
And are you doing C2E2 again? Because I know he's doing it again, I think.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. And is that a good show for you? I'll take it you'll have a table at that one, will you?
I will. And I think my two favorite shows, or I don't know. C2E2 has been one of my better shows monetarily, every year.
Right.
But it's also I really like Chicago, and I know a lot of people in the area, so it's a good excuse to go. But I think Chicago and Heroes are my two favorite shows that I do. I do them every year. So as long as I keep getting into C2E2, I'll continue doing it, I guess.
And that's kind of about is after New York and San Diego, that's kind of the third biggest, is it now, or would you say?
I don't know. I was thinking it was Emerald City, but I might be wrong.
Okay, right, no, yeah.
We're all fucking the same company, so.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So your table at sort of a big American convention like that then, obviously being artist, I'm guessing you have a few copies of your comics and stuff, but it's mainly the artwork and prints. What do you have on your table at a show like that?
There's definitely, I got comics. There's a lot of artwork. The majority of it's probably original stuff in binders and pages. I lug these pages. Nobody buys them, but whatever. It fills up the table.
Nobody buys your pages. Come on, people.
Yeah.
Let's correct this. This has to change.
I think I probably make in terms of making money, I probably make most of my money on commissions. And I make most of the money before I even go to the show. On the show floors, I do okay,
So you take pre-show commissions, do you? And then people come and collect them.
Yeah.
So you'll draw them before you get there, will you? Or
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Usually okay. It's all done before I even get there. I mean, I'll do them at the show too, but you can usually tell, like, the really elaborate ones are at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
yeah. Cause I saw your post on Twitter sort of, you know, for commissions, and there's some beautiful, like, full page sort of pieces on there. I know you do like head, like busts and stuff, but like you.
Yeah. That Bizarro headpiece. Yeah. That I loved that Bizarro. You yeah. did too. That's mm. awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. I was actually happy with that, which is a rare.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah,
I was a fan of the Lockjaw from He-Man.
Oh yes,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So yeah, good. Yeah, Trapjaw, not Lockjaw. That's Inhumans, isn't it?
Disease.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Too many jaws in the world. That's my problem.
I hate correcting people.
You we like the, doing it to him.
Yeah,
well.
You pick yeah. the right show because people are correcting me all the time.
Yeah, those actually, those busts that I've been doing are, they're just for fun or whatever. And also, so I have some new stuff to put on my table at C2E2, actually. So they're
your own sort of original artwork that you're just like, I want to draw this character, and then you draw it, and then you have it on your table.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I don't.
You're also quite well known for covers as well, aren't you, Kelly? I know you did a Turtles cover.
Oh,
you've done
that's
a few,
so
haven't you?
Good, that Turtles yeah. cover.
I did a Turtles cover, yes. I've done a few covers. I did a bunch for the Puppet Master comic series from
my God, I love the Puppet
Action
Master.
Lab.
Aren't they like the best films ever?
They're pretty great. I mean, yeah. even the worst ones are good in some way. So you know.
Yeah,
I'm definitely a fan of them.
Yeah.
When I actually I was pretty stoked to get the opportunity to do those, and I did a few other covers for like the Full Moon comics, like one a series that didn't come out, but
which was that, if you don't, are you allowed to say, or
I don't know, I mean, who cares? Dr. Mordred.
Oh, brilliant. Which was kind of a Doctor Strange movie, wasn't it?
That was the Jeffrey Coombs one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
one of my favorite actors.
Okay,
one of my favorite actors.
That was actually the first one that they contacted me about, and I was like, "Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'd love to do that." And I did two, and the second one I did, I still one of my favorite things I've done recently. And then I found out that the series wasn't going to come out, and I was like, "Well, all right."
Yeah.
I just recently did one for the Subspecies comics.
For real.
Yeah. And that was pretty big, because I think part of the reason why I even ended up getting on the radar for the Full Moon stuff was because I was talking on Twitter once, like a year or two ago, or further back than that probably, about how I really wanted to do a Subspecies comic or whatever.
Unreal.
And then we started talking about, because it was around the time that Action Lab had just gotten the licensing for the Full Moon comics, and I don't know, I guess they saw the conversation later or something, and then sent me a message about it.
Is that the sort of black cover that's with the face and the red all over the mouth and stuff? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, there could be any number of covers I've done.
Boo Hag has a similar kind of aesthetic. Works, though. Looks amazing.
There's got to be space for loads of comics from that company. I mean, you've got like Castle Freak and the Mighty Trancers, and you know, there's loads of stuff that, you know.
Everything comes back to Trancers with you, doesn't it?
It does, isn't it? Or Ginger Dead Man. Isn't there a Ginger Dead Man?
There is a comic, Ginger Dead.
Sorry?
Sorry?
I think it's just starting. Or there's a new one. Anyways, I don't know if there was one before.
They've rebooted it. How typical.
I guess there was one before. It's just new. It was a mini series, and now there's a new mini series. I think maybe is what it is. Or I think this one's actually like the Ginger Dead Man and the Evil Bong. Maybe
that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh my God. So,
and they're doing a Waiting for Godot one, I think, after that. I think it's
Oh my God!
Little highbrow joke for you there. You like that?
Right. Yeah. Very, very nice. So, horror is clearly your flavor of choice, I would say, when it comes to genres. It would yeah. I would that be true?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is horror like? Is that what you were influenced by? Like when you started getting into comics and started drawing and stuff? Was it always I want to draw monsters?
Largely. I mean, I've told the story, you know, probably hundreds of times at this point about how the first person that favorite artist that I knew, like I knew that, like, I really liked this guy's stuff. Like, it was the first time I ever realized that, like, or stopped and thought about the fact that, oh, wait, there's a person drawing this stuff. Was like Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah.
And I know you wrote, if
anyone reads your blog, you wrote a lovely piece about how you actually met him for the first time as well, didn't you, I think?
Well, I didn't really meet him, but it was, I was near him.
Near him, close. You sat near. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I talked about how I regret that I never actually tried to be more assertive in meeting him, but, he was, like, the Swamp Thing stuff, it was like the first
amazing
thing that really grabbed me like that. And, you know, I was already really into comics by that point, but I had just never stopped and thought about it, like that there's some person doing this. And I think maybe some of the reason why it was Bernie Wrightson is maybe because I started to figure out that there was stuff that wasn't comics that I'd seen that he had done that was maybe part of it.
Okay.
You know, like, it wasn't just a comic. There was something more to it or whatever. So.
Okay. The I'm going to talk a little bit, Kelly, about influences. I see quite a lot of Mike Plug in your work as well. Is that somebody you're fond of? Or?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, love Plug.
Yeah. And obviously Plug's well known for doing Man Thing. I'd kill to see you on that book, dude. We often say this, but that's got you written all over it, that book, isn't it?
I have no interest in doing a Man Thing story.
Yeah. You're just playing hard to get now. Is that what we're doing now?
Yeah, I figure I might as well try that now. the years of banging on Twitter, because you know that's how you get to do things, is you just don't shut up about it on Twitter. No, yeah, Man Thing's one of those, like, so don't get me wrong, like, I would not turn my nose up at work doing something with Marvel or DC or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's definitely not my end game, you know? Like, that thinking is, it's kind of archaic and old, and the idea of, like, your final goal being working for them, like, I'm not... There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not, you know. And I also feel like realistically, they don't want me, you know, like that's the way my brain works. Mm. But
I wouldn't be so sure. Yeah. Mm.
I think one of the ideal things is for a lot of creators, they want to be able to like do their own thing and like create, obviously you see a lot of the Image books, but then, you know, occasionally dip their toe into like the big two just to mess about with a character that they've always liked or something like that. That's the idea.
And that's fantastic. Mm. Like, and I mean, I like that. That's kind of what it is now. Mm. I know that there's still people that like, they just really want to work with those guys, and that's great. But I like that so many bigger name people now are getting to where they're more known for their own stuff than they are the work they did.
Yeah.
On you know, X-Men or whatever. Not that there's wrong with that. I would.
Yeah.
Kill to, you know, draw an X-Men book or whatever, but I would love to draw an X-Men book. I might kill to draw a Man Thing book, but
there's a certain sort of, because of your influences from, you know, stuff like Eerie and Creepy and stuff like that, there is a certain Bronze Age sensibility to the way you approach a horror story, for example, you know, like a Jim Colan or a Mike Plug, or I mean, I'd even say maybe there's a little bit of the Kelly Jones about you as well. Would I be right there, or?
It's, I think that's all relevant. I, those are all people I enjoy their stuff, you know, and I never think about, I don't know, I'm terrible with the idea of like, hey, list some influences, because I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, I kind of take, I take everything in, you know, like it never ends. Like if I see something I like, it just sticks with me.
Yeah.
But those guys especially have all stood out to me. And I've come to accept that I have a tendency, especially when I'm doing horror stuff, to want to lean into an older technique a little bit, I guess. But
what sort of thing do you mean by that? What sort of approach are you talking about there?
I don't know. Like I don't know. Maybe in the way I ink stuff, like, you know, the heavier blacks, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
Which falls back in with what you were saying about the Kelly Jones thing. Like when I was, you know, when I was a teenager or like in the 90s or whatever, like I was gaga for Kelly Jones, you know? I mean, yeah. I still love his stuff, but like, yeah, I mean, people like him stuck out to me because they were drawing different.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Jim Lee, McFarlane, like
Larson. Yeah.
Type of drawing, you know, like, and believe me, I was fine with that stuff. I was embarrassingly into fucking McFarlane, like to a disgusting degree, and
it's all an addiction.
Yeah, it's funny when I look at that stuff now, though. I feel different, but
yeah.
That also
works with different art, though, as well, isn't it? Like I see stuff that I liked in the 90s, and I look at it now and go, that's not my taste. But certainly,
right. Yeah, that's another part too. I think as you get older, like your tastes mature, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if mature is the right word, but they change. Yeah.
Yeah. We like to think it's mature.
Yeah. Not on this show.
No.
Are there any other artists that you've always looked up to, or you've maybe noticed recently, more recently than, and you really liking what they're doing? Or, I mean, I'd say Corbin as well. Possibly, is that a good shout? Or?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, who in their right mind doesn't love Corbin?
Exactly. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah, I'm terrible at like this kind of stuff. I've been pouring back over like some Wally Wood stuff. And,
Yes.
I've also, we were talking before you started about the fact that I joke that I don't read anymore, but it's really not that I don't. Like, I still read comics, and I still get new stuff, but
yeah,
I'm just super far behind on everything.
Yeah.
And it's hard
to keep up to date, dude. I mean, isn't it really, these days, you know?
There's so much coming out, so much good stuff coming out.
Yeah.
But most of the reading I've been doing in the last, I don't know, year has just been, like, either rereading old stuff or stuff that maybe I just never got around to, or I skipped it.
Yeah.
And so I've been, you know, like I've been rereading the, I should say reading for the first time, because I never fully read the entirety of the Akira run.
Okay.
I haven't either.
I never had all of the issues. Like I have random issues in trade paperback.
Yeah. That's what I've got. Yeah. Yeah.
But I got that, the hardcover thing that everybody got.
Oh, and, what, the huge, like, case that had all of the volumes in it. Oh.
It's pretty amazing. But but I've been rereading that and kind of fallen back in love with the Otomo stuff. Because he was a huge influence on me.
Right.
In the earlier years. So, yeah, it's been nice kind of revisiting that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think what we can definitely say about your artwork is it is not a sum of all of its influences. I mean, you've named a few influences there that you'd never see in your artwork. And that's what I love about
artwork. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd have never guessed the Akira influence at all. Yeah.
But I was super into some manga and anime in the 90s.
Yeah.
Right.
And like some of that stuff I still really like, some of it, you know, whatever, but it was also kind of before it blew up and became the thing that it is. And so it was, a lot of the stuff was more off the wall stuff, I guess.
What sort of thing, Kelly?
Again, I am terrible with
names. Because there was that period where we only had certain amounts of manga, wasn't there, anime? Now seemingly there's a million things to choose, but
they've all got like 250 volumes, haven't they? Because they just don't stop making them.
Back then, you only had like Guyver or Crying Freeman, or
I loved the Guyver stuff.
That was nuts, wasn't it?
And I think I still kind of do. Like, I still love that design and everything.
Oh, have you ever drawn the Guyver? I'd love to see you do a set of Guyver headshots.
One time I drew the Guyver.
What, never again? Because you thought I'm not trying this again.
I don't know. Like I can't remember if it was a commission or if I just did it. But I don't know. Maybe I will now. I don't know.
It's quite a tricky design.
Yeah, it is. It really is, isn't it?
Mm. It's kind
of all that stuff's like a lot of those designs are like kind of intimidating in their detail and shapes. Like there's a lot of shapes that I just kind of hate drawing. A lot of those designs, just because like, you know, there's a certain, I don't know, finesse to the how great the shape, like the way I draw, like it's not this like super tight, like something that's like rounded or circular, like I drive myself nuts with the fact that I won't use the tools to make it like round and circular. I just take my brush and go, oh, here we go, and hope it like resembles what it's supposed to. And so I drive myself nuts with that stuff sometimes.
When you do it like that, it kind of retains an energy as opposed to being perfect circles all the time.
Yeah,
I don't hate on people that do stuff like that. I kind of admire it. And you didn't know there's world championships for freehand circle drawing.
What?
That must be a really interesting show.
I did not know about that. And if you pay attention to my stuff, that should not be surprising.
Dan, where do you find out about this stuff?
It popped up. I can't remember what it popped up this week, and I was like, fucking hell.
I'm getting in training for this.
Yeah, world freehand circle drawing. I'd actually be quite intimidated when you see some of the people almost draw perfect circles freehand. You're like, okay.
It's like art school confidential suddenly.
But, I mean, you can draw a perfect circle, but what are you doing with the rest of your life? That's all I've got to ask.
Yeah.
But once you got that down, you kind of might as well just...
That's what we can do then, draw around your balls.
Get much better than that.
Yeah.
You could probably get a job drawing like doorknobs or something.
Good point. Yeah. You can imagine going for a job at a doorknob company and they're going, what ones do you want to draw? What about these ones and that? Just circle ones, mate. Sorry.
Yeah.
Or just like, you could get like, background gigs on SpongeBob SquarePants or something.
You got a cartoon with any balloons in it?
No, that's not a perfect circle.
Yeah. You're fired.
That might be a little out of their wheelhouse.
Yeah. Just drawing Venn diagrams all day. Right.
Yeah.
You could draw clown noses.
We're just going to be listing off perfect circles now, aren't we?
I don't know how you're trained for that. You just keep drawing it and measuring it, and you know that's a bit out.
Yeah, but no matter how much you train,
that sounds like you would just drive yourself crazy.
Yeah, you drive crazy.
Yeah,
that's probably a lot of serial killers and sociopaths at that convention. Isn't
Also, that's like, I'm guessing they have to draw on a board or something. That's a completely different sort of mindset to drawing on a pad in front of you or drawing on a.
You can imagine they all go and draw circles for like hours for all Saturday and Sunday.
Or do some.
They just go mental and draw a triangle or something and just pass out.
I'll do some baseline research and then report back.
I'd love to hear about it. Yeah.
Group.
Yeah.
Later day.
Oh, dear. The art suite, the art craze sweeping the nation.
Nation, yeah. Drawing a circle.
Jesus Christ.
I bet the convention t-shirts are fun.
Then he can eat or drink from round things.
Yeah.
Oh. Round tables. Anyway,
there we go.
Actually, you just made the convention seem way more interesting.
Yeah.
Like, the stuff where it's just round tables, like in a round room.
Oh my god, that
round biscuits.
They're just like in, they're in like ever like in closing circles. So like each row of tables, it's just in a circular pattern going around until there's just one table in the center. That's like
to get in, they couldn't say right, form a line.
Well, they'd have to go around the building.
Yeah.
You know, like one of these guys is like gonna listen to this and just be like, "Man,
yeah,
fuck those guys."
Everyone has a go at me.
Grabbing a pen and paper. Yeah, this shit's gold.
Yeah, it's like I'm gonna write a letter. Oh, I can't draw anything but circles.
Yeah. And you know, the guy that's going to hear this is probably like, I probably make more money than any of you. And he's probably,
oh, God, yeah.
But he can't get a girlfriend. I've got to tell you, Kelly, he'll have trouble in those stakes, won't he?
I don't know. Circular, you know.
Circular movements.
If she ever says to him, could you draw a picture of me? He's going to be like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He just draws one tit.
Well, he could draw two tits.
In the middle, as long as they don't join.
We didn't say
fine.
He couldn't draw more than one circle. I mean, he can draw all the circles he wants. He could probably blow your mind and use different size circles and make a very good portrait of her.
Yeah.
A bubble person.
Yeah. Oh my god.
I'm going to smash it up. Get drunk, smash the place up.
Oh dear. Bloody hell. Where were we? We were talking about influences. But,
Is there any sort of ideal people you'd like to work with as a writer at the moment, Kelly? Is anyone whose work out there you think, I think he's suited to what I do. I'd really like to, you know, do something with him or her.
Sure. I mean, there's probably a few people, I guess. Well, you know, like one thing I'd really like to get back to is, me and Steve Niles had a thing that we were going to do that was completely, it wasn't a horror thing. And it was based on his animals. And it was pretty exciting. And I'm like a fan of like Steve Niles, like when he was in a band, like back in the like 80s and 90s.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I didn't actually put together that he was the same Steve Niles until a few years ago. And when I did, I was like, holy shit. And
what band is this? I didn't know he was in a band.
It was a band called Grey Matter. Well, it was a band called Grey Matter, and they were also like one different guy, and they were called just Three. They were part of the whole the DC... hardcore Discord Records thing, if you guys are familiar with that.
Yeah.
I mean, great band. And I was excited to work with Steve on that, but we just, you know, we both got busy and pulled in different directions, and we just, it's not like something that won't happen. It's just, kind of on the side for right now. But that, it was pretty fun, and like I'd still like to come back to that because I still really like Steve and I like his stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, Colin would be somebody that I would have put out there probably.
Oh, cool.
So it's nice to get to do that, and you know, recently I worked with Chris Sabella and Ryan Frarier. I feel like I'm always saying his name wrong.
I met him in New York a couple of years ago. Really nice guy. Really impressed with some of his stuff. Yeah. He's done some Star Trek, I think, recently. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, I'm sure. Yeah. What about English creators? Is there any English creators you'd like to collaborate with? Anyone that comes to mind or British?
You know, I don't know. If I had to be completely honest, I'm sure there is, and I probably just don't know they're British. You know, I'm kind of out of the loop on a lot of like creators. Like there's a lot of stuff that I see and the like names don't stick, and it's not because I don't care. I'm just kind of dumb that way. I don't memorize things as well as I used to.
Yeah.
Well, you've got your art cave and your drawing table, and like, you know, you're just in there just working hard on all the comics, aren't you, really?
Sure, yeah.
Why do I feel like you're trying to convince me? All right, and here's the
feel like you're trying to convince me.
Oh,
don't go in his case.
Really? Yeah. Now, you said earlier about being distracted. I think we're just going to briefly come back to this, because I think distractions is something that everyone listening to this show and every creator out there can agree with. You know, some are better than ignoring the distractions than others. What are the things that you find have distracted you the worst in the past?
Dogs.
Yes.
Living creatures. Living creatures is fine.
I don't know. Like I'm sure like a lot of, you know, most people that are sitting at home working, you know, I'll put on movies or TV stuff. You know, usually try to put dumb stuff on that I'm not really going to worry about paying attention to.
Yeah.
But I've more than a few times stumbled into something that I was actually kind of good, and then next thing I know, I've just been watching it and I haven't moved in like an hour.
Yeah, I've had that.
But that or the whole ritual of trying to figure out what to watch. I've wasted like an hour just sitting there scrolling through stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much to do, but we can't choose.
Yeah.
There's so many things to watch now, but it, you know, remember in England when I was a kid, we had 3 TV channels, and that's all there was. You know, now we've got thousands of TV channels, and I still can't find something decent to watch.
Yeah.
I don't even have cable, but just with all the different streaming stuff, like it's like that, or having to sift through all the doubles because like everything's on everything now.
Yeah.
It fucks me off that they synchronize breaks.
Oh, it does, Emmy. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, like you're watching like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
You're watching like World's Most Mental Serial Killers, and it goes to a break, and you swap to another channel to see like World's Most Mental Police Chases. Then that's on a break too.
Oh, God, yeah.
You watch some exciting television.
Yeah. It hasn't got World's Most Mental at the beginning. I'm not really interested.
The World's Most Perfect Circle.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I think though, maybe the worst distraction for me probably is video games.
Yeah,
I play a lot of video games, so I'm good at like if I need to get something done, I'll get it done before I do that. But I've definitely had days where I maybe I played something before I went to bed the night before, because that's usually how it works out. I'll work until late, and then I might play something for a little while before I go to bed. And then in the morning, like maybe I'll just be kind of really wanting to do that and not, you know, and not draw the scene with like 15 people and an elaborate background or something. And
I think a lot of artists sometimes want a distraction to keep them away from a crowd scene.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's even worse when you write it for yourself. Which is just frustrating.
Those are the dumbest ones.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, or a story with lots of horses or cars. And you think, why have I written this?
Yeah.
It always sounds like a good idea when you're like, I'm going to push myself.
Yeah.
And then when you sit down to, you know, the act of pushing yourself, you're like, oh, God damn it.
But it normally ends up with being some of the work that you're most proud of.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I was trying to end on a positive note.
Yes.
Bollocks.
Oh, dear. So, what's your table number for Emerald City, Kelly?
I don't know.
Right. are you like everyone else and you put it on your Twitter?
Well, generally, but like I said, I'm not, I don't have a table. I'm at the,
I just looked on the Twitter, and it's literally, I'm a beer ECCC, so
I'm at the Wave Blue World booth.
Ah,
the publisher.
Real.
Like they're putting out the This Nightmare Kills Fascists anthology, and I drew a couple stories in that. So I'll be hanging out there and signing some books and fiddling around and stuff.
Nice. So if there's any of our American listeners who are going to that show,
yeah,
A, we're very jealous of you.
Yeah.
And B, go check out Kelly at that table.
Will you be drawing at their table, will you, Kelly? Or
yeah. I'm hoping to be able to like maybe take a couple commissions at the show.
Yeah.
It'll probably boil down to if there's, you know, room for it, but I'm pretty compact, so yeah. I'm a little guy, so I can fit anywhere.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you, Kat. I think there's a lot of our listeners who are fans of your work. So yeah, thank you for talking to us.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, you're definitely coming back. Yeah, keep us posted on all the work you'll be doing.
Have you ever been invited to an English con at all, Kelly? Or
I have not.
We'll see what we can do about that.
Give it time.
Yeah. I'd love to come out to one, but yeah, no.
Yeah, I can see you going down a storm at Thought Bubble.
Oh God! Oh,
yeah,
God,
definitely.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
We'll just put him in.
You can see how actively I'm trying.
Yes.
It'd be great to do something out of the States. Yeah.
Have you been to UK before, or?
Nope. No, I actually haven't been. I went to Canada when I was a kid.
That kind of counts, doesn't it?
Yeah. Does it?
Yeah.
Your grasp on geography is quite shocking, Tony.
If you're desperate enough to say you've been out of the country, then yes, it counts.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time, though, before you start traveling the world, definitely. I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah. I'm sure. I hope to actually... I've had a couple offers for Canada, and I have to take care of the whole, what do they call it? The
extradition?
The passport thing.
Oh, so.
I am... I'm lazy. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, until then, you're just going to have to keep practicing those circles.
Yeah.
Now, Kelly's going to stick with us for the next little bit while we've got some shout-outs and stuff. I tell you what, thank you, Kelly. That was fascinating.
Yeah, it was really good, man. Yeah,
cheers, dude.
Yeah, we look forward to today.
Yeah. Before we get on to the second part of the show, do we have any shout-outs, etc.?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Firstly, I made everyone jealous on the podcast by getting an original through from Claire Spiller. She sent me one of her Inktober.
Yeah, drawings. That book's amazing.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. She sent me the Jessica Jones one, which is, if you go to it, is I think it's like the third one in. Gorgeous. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, really.
I love the golden black tones that she's got on that. You can see the texture of the gold artwork on the just in the
you can.
The Inktober book. So the original must be magnificent. Yeah.
There's some gorgeous stuff in here. Mm. Brilliant. But if you go to clairespiller.co.uk, you can buy some of Claire's original stuff and see what she's up to.
She sketched a really... little Leslie Knope in mine, so I was quite pleased.
Cool.
Nice one.
Yeah. She's I was speaking to a children's book publisher earlier in the week, and we were talking about her art, and I genuinely think she's someone who's going places in the art world, really do. Big shout out to Laura and Christian Wild Goose. I went dog walking with them earlier in the week, or as we like to refer to it, when the wild geese met Stan. So it was a fun little day. Went out. The final one is a little bit of a hint, but we saw we've been sent a preview copy for Accident Man, the movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Which you're about to watch, Dan, aren't you? And me and Vince watched today.
Yeah.
Just,
I'm going to be watching that.
I'll tell you what, I've been wanting to see a movie like this for a long time. It is fucking brilliant. Obviously, it's a movie of the comic, which we're all fans of. We're all big fans of the comic by Pat Mills and Tony Skinner and a number of different artists. But it does it justice, I've got to tell you. Really, really enjoyed it. Are we going to say, guys, are we, or what do you think?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, let's. Yeah? In a few weeks. We have briefly mentioned that we've got some exciting stuff in the works.
Yeah, but, one of which is Kelly, obviously.
Yeah,
yeah,
always exciting. But we're going to have Pat Mills back on the show, and he's bringing someone with him.
Yeah,
and that person is action movie star. I think I can quite honestly call him that because Yeah. Scott Adkins.
Scott Adkins and Pat are coming on the show to talk Accident Man, and we could not be happier. Yeah. We've had this under wraps for a few weeks now, and we decided it was a good time to talk about it, in that Accident Man got a release in the States, and it's getting a release here in April, and we got to see the preview copies of the movie, and it is so faithful to the feel of the comic. Not everything is exactly the same, and you wouldn't expect it to be in a movie from a comic, but it is just a riot. Yeah. It is so anti-established punk, fuck you, kick you in the face movie. It is just the best thing, with a big smirk on everyone's faces as it's going on.
I mean, you're selling it well.
Mate, I think it's out. Yeah. It's out with you, so I would definitely give it a go, Kelly, because it came out in the States first. But it's some of the best fight scenes, genuinely, in any cinema.
I will say that rarely do you have a British action movie that has a one-on-one fight scenes that are, I think they're pretty much unrivaled for any British action film. Without a doubt.
Yes.
And you've got the likes of, I mean, Scott Adkins is in it, but also you've got Ray Park, you've got Michael Jai White, you got Amy Johnson from, was it Lady Bloodfight? She's in it.
Yeah. Ray Stevenson.
Yeah.
It is start to finish. There's whole fights in it. I actually look at it, I've watched it twice now, and I thought, how the fuck did he do that? It literally looks like he's kicked a bloke's head off, pretty much.
Yeah.
It starts, it means to go on. We get everything that we loved in the comic, you know, PMT, post, was it post-murder?
Post-murder detention.
Yeah, he goes, I've got PMT. And he goes in and beats everyone up in a pub and calls it post-murder detention just to get rid of it. It's, it's brilliant. Absolutely loved it. I wrote a review of it. I spoke to Pat earlier today, and him and Lisa both laughed their way through it. They absolutely loved it. So give it a go, Accident Man. It's available in the States, and it's coming here, I think, the 16th of April. You'll be able to get it on Blu-ray. Really good.
There you go. So there you go. That's probably the biggest shout-out. Dan, do you have any shout-outs?
No, not this week.
No, me neither. I think because we had a convention show last week, I've completely overdone it. And now I can't remember anyone. Do you ever have that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
Well, we're just giving some lovely prints from Daryl Thorpe. I was going to mention that. And loads of art prints from the show. Chris Imber gave us some for the Reckless Heroes. And Brian Vander, he gave me a piece for Vanguard issue 7. Yeah.
So he did the cover to issue 7, didn't he?
And he did, yeah.
He gave me the art in New York last year, and I completely forgot. You might know Brian, actually, Kelly. He shares a table with Mark Lamming at Chicago.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, he's
good. Well, they're both good eggs. Yeah, both. That's like Party Central, their table, as I like to describe it. But so, yeah,
and
both good guys.
You know, let's face it, guys. Brian Vander is a handsome man. Come on, we can all be confident in saying that. Like,
he's a good looking jock of a guy, isn't he?
You did say jock, didn't you?
I don't mean Scottish either. You know that.
Yeah. Oh dear. Anyway, so that's all our shout-outs. And now, we're on the road home. So, what are you going to do over the next week? You're going to read some comics, aren't you? You better read some comics. Yes, it's the recommendation section of the show. I've never actually done an intro like that before. That sounded quite professional,
didn't it? Dramatic, actually. Slightly aroused again.
I know.
Kind of put me on the back foot there.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So, who wants to go first with the recommendations for the week?
Go on, one of you go, guys.
I'll go?
Go on, Dan.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to do two quick ones. I picked up Sam Webster's Sometimes I Just Want to Kill You, or Public Transport. I guess that means he might be doing more than that. Cause
he wants
that's
to kill
just
people in more places than just public transport, that's to me.
So I read this on the train home the other day and was kind of like holding it aloft. Hopefully the other commuters would see that. The blurb is, every day I get the bus into work and every day I lose a little more faith in humanity. Funnily enough, that's not a coincidence. Join me on a ranty, sweary, venti, cathartic journey through all the reasons something as simple as getting to school, work, college, etc., maybe in a Corot Con, can be absolutely infuriating. And I can solo attest to that. To be fair, I'm more driven mental by my train company as opposed to the other commuters, but it's
anyone
great.
Anyone that's followed Dan on Twitter will know that's the case.
I apologise again, because half my stuff's comic book art, the other stuff's about moaning about Southern Rail.
So, apologies.
That's great.
I spoke to Sam about this as he was going along with it, and we had a chat about it. And I actually genuinely think this Sam has stepped up with this work.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think he's shown it, the personality that comes through from. I mean, Sam's quite a thoughtful guy, isn't he? And he's sort of you can see the anger in his face sitting on a seat on the bus. It just makes me laugh. And he's always there's a bit at the end of it where he's actually written into a Facebook group. I think he calls it a book face group. In the comic, but I think that's sort of half a genuine story. Or I think he caused a bit of a storm by writing into the Facebook group for the local town, saying all the wankers who are on the bus. And I think one of these things got like a couple of hundred replies or something.
Yeah.
It's like one of these sort of things.
I think that is true. I recall saying near at the time he sort of mentioned there's a couple of local groups around me, and it's like I just keep my mouth stum because
He's got people who reply to his post. One's called Actually in Prison. One's called Michelle Mankey Pants. One's called Dickhead Mikey Boy and Condescending Cassie. And it's like, it's just he's sort of replicated, kind of replicated. I hope it's not real, but he's kind of replicated the chat he had.
Yeah. Have you noticed the bus timetable on that book?
Yeah.
It is the funniest thing. I haven't got a copy in front of me now, but it's absolutely sublime. Yeah.
One of the buses is cancelled due to utter bullshit.
I said one thing, we were talking about the artwork. I think Sam's artwork is so much stronger in black and white.
Mm. Yeah, I do as well.
His styling and things seems to, because he's got a heavy sort of manga anime influence. And I think the black and white says that very well.
Yeah.
A really strong piece of work here. Yeah. Really liking the black and white and the tones. Top work, Sam.
If you go to sjwebster.net, you can get yourself a copy. There you go.
Just recommend.
Yeah. Nice. What's the other one you had, Dan?
I read Battle Badges as well, which popped up in the live show, which is great. I wish I'm kind of kicking myself I didn't buy the other issues, but. The kind of the Teenage Ninja Turtles influence, Steve wears that proudly on his sleeve. It's a great little comic. I love it.
Well, Steve Sims will be at the Swindon Comic Book Day in March.
Nice.
If you want the other issues, Dan, we'll pick them up.
I'll badger him for the rest.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God. My bone is gone now. It's gone away.
He was doing so well, didn't he? He just went too far all the time. Right, do you want to go next, Tony?
How about Kelly? Did you have something you wanted to recommend, dude?
Like I said, I've been rereading those Akira books, and they are a astonishingly quick read, considering how.
Really?
Because they're convoluted. That story is.
Yeah, because there's quite a lot of pages to them. That surprised me that they're a quick read.
There's not a ton of dialogue, at least in most of it. I mean, there's sections where you're like, Jesus, shut up. But. like I said, I've been getting really into that, and I recently. I don't know why I put this off so long, but I recently finally read the first volume of Headlopper.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah.
Like, I love his work anyways, but for some reason it took me that long to read it. It's a fantastic, fun book.
It's a good thick volume as well. Volume one's a pretty, it's a substantial sort of read, but a quick read. Yeah, you get a lot of bang for your buck, I think, with that book.
Yeah, the first issue is double length as well, isn't it?
In terms of like new stuff, I honestly, I think the newest thing I've read, the first issue of Abbott from Boom.
Okay.
That was fantastic. Like, as far as first issues go, it's a great story. That's like. Kind of a nice, like, noir story with some cult demonish kind of stuff going on. It's sort of a, but it's kind of awesome because it's like not the normal you know, usually when you see those, they're set with like, they're told from the, I guess the white American point of view kind of idea, and this is a story that's got more of a, almost like blaxploitation kind of like Shafty kind of feel to it. It follows Abbott as a female writer. She's like a newspaper reporter, investigative reporter. And she's African American. The majority of the main characters and everything and what's going on in it is very reflective of the time period that it's set in, like in the 60s or 70s. And yeah, it seems like it'll be a really
I'll have a look for that. So.
Yeah. That sounds like that'd be right up your street, Tony.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
Nice. You said you didn't have anything, and you've just given us three absolutely cracking ones.
Yeah. Well, you know, I pulled them out of my ass, really.
All right, Tony, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I'm going to, bearing in mind Kelly was coming on the show, I was thinking about what I was going to talk about, and then I was in Orbital Friday night and speaking to Adam Sharif, and he was reading this book, and I went, oh, I forgot this was out, and I went and picked it up, and it's the Swamp Thing Winter Special, 80-page giant. Has anyone read it yet?
No.
It definitely touches on a couple of the artists we've spoken about today. But it's a book that's kind of dedicated to the work of Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson, both of whom we lost last year. And I think they do right by them with it, actually. I'm definitely falling back into DC recently, plus with Bendis going there. I listened to the Word Balloon today, the Bendis interview.
How obvious was it he was going to do Superman? That was always on the cards. How could anyone think anything else?
Yeah. He explains why, and I think it's good, and he's honest, and he's a you know, he says I've not fallen out with anyone, and I'm definitely on board a lot of their books now, and obviously our love of Tom King as well. Tom writes the first story in this issue, which is called The Talk of Saints, with art. The cover is done, and the interior art for the first story is done by Jason Fabok, F-A-B-O-K, colors by Brand Anderson, letters by Darren Bennett. It's a really, really dark story that is fitting of those sort of short horror stories we saw in Eerie and Creepy and books like that. Mm. And Swamp Thing's basically walking across a sort of snowy wasteland, and he's carrying this boy kid. And as the story goes on and each page turns... Kid. Sorry?
It's a boy kid.
A boy. He's a kid. Yeah.
Boy who's a kid. Aren't they the same thing?
Yeah. Well... Yeah, but he could be a girl kid, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get me?
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. And he's either it's snowing, and every time they rest every so often, and I think one of the scenes has Swamp Thing pull his own hand off and set fire to it because there's nothing to burn.
Amazing.
And this sort of bleak, it's a bit like Cormac McCarthy's The Road. There's a certain amount to that to it.
God, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's the most bleak. That's the most depressing film I've ever seen in my life. You know, I walked out. I remember walking out of the cinema from seeing that, and it started snowing, and I literally thought the world had ended. Yeah, you know, sort of, fuck. and as the sort of morning comes, Swamp Thing forgets what has happened the previous day, and this kid keeps reminding him what has happened. And he's unsure, and as he walks, he's becoming weaker and weaker. There's one thing, and apologies if you haven't read it yet, and I'm going to talk about spoilers here, because I think you can only review this book with a little bit of a spoil around it. But there's one sequence where Swamp Thing fights a bear. This bear appears, who's starving, hungry, and it's really brutal. But what happens is he kills it. Swamp Thing kills it. That's one thing. He shouldn't have trouble fighting a bear, should he?
No.
Yeah, and he stabs it through the face, through the brain. And as it dies, he pulls it towards him and says he'll find it in the other side, in the green. And it's this really sort of tragically dramatic scene. It's sort of the writing and the art just holds on for a whole page. You know, as this animal dies. And they carry on, as they reach a certain field, there's men laying in the snow dead. And it turns out one of them's playing possum, and he turns round and he blows Swamp Thing's head off. And as Swamp Thing is sort of reforming behind this bloke, the bloke is basically saying to the kid, "I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to eat you because I'm hungry." And it's this really sort of horrible moment. It's really sort of brutal stuff. it gets colder and colder, and Swamp Thing is getting weaker and thinner, and he's becoming, you know, sort of almost skeletoid, you know, in the way he looks. And there's this moment, and this is where the spoiler comes. There's this moment where it's a double page spread, and all it is snowy wasteland around them, and it's just mist in the air and all this sort of thing, and ice in the air. And he says to this kid, he has a realization, and he says to this kid, "You're the monster." And this is just incredibly strong story. It's just really well done. I mean, Tom King, I mean, we know Tom's a class act, but he's really pulled it out of the bag for this, yeah, for me. You know, a really strong issue. The art is just gorgeous. Just incredible stuff. I'm suddenly this guy's Fabox. I'm suddenly his fan. It's just from this
he
one issue.
He posted on Twitter, I think, because he did the cover, and he was like, yeah, he couldn't believe that he got to draw, you know, basically his ideal project, you know, drawing Swamp, yeah, Thing, and he got to draw the story that he wanted to draw. Do you know what I mean? Looking at the, yeah, cover was like, my God.
Yeah, it's a brilliant cover, and it's a cover that just isn't like a stock footage image of Swamp Thing or whatever. It sums up the story.
Yeah.
You know, there's bits of it that tell you about what the book's about, which really improves it for me. Yeah, brilliant. I mean, it could be a Len Wein story and it could be an Alan Moore story to me. It's this, there's a Steve Bissett, Tottle Bean sort of feel to it. And then the second half of the book, it starts with a letter from an editor who had worked with Len Wein previously. And she talks about, Rebecca Taylor, her name is, and she talks about what a warm individual he is. Did you ever meet Len Wein, Kelly, or anything like that?
Oh, no, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've said hello to him at a convention, and I listened to him. He did that Nerdist Writers podcast for quite a while, and he's a really sort of jocular, friendly guy. Do you know what I mean? And she talks very, very nicely of him. And what this is it's a story that he had written for a new series that came out of that mini series he did with Kelly Jones. I think it was last year that came out. The Swamp Thing series. So what he does, his style of writing was that he would write a very sort of detailed page-by-page breakdown. He gives it to the artist. The artist draws it, and then he goes back over and writes the dialogue in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But he obviously, because he sadly passed away, he didn't. And so they've commissioned Kelly to finish this, and it's sort of a wordless script, a wordless story, sorry. It's there's no words, and what you do is you get the story, and it's a really impressive story. It looks gorgeous. You can actually read it without needing word balloons because they're both that skilled, you know. Solomon Grundy appears in it, and there's a brilliant appearance of Batman in it. I posted a rainy page in Gotham up on my Twitter earlier today because it's just so gorgeous. And it's got Kelly. I love the way Kelly Jones draws. He's got that sort of really sort of idiosyncratic sort of creepy, he's unlike anyone else really to a certain extent. I really, really do enjoy his stuff. And then after that you can read through and you can read the script and how Len Wein had laid it out, and Len Wein wrote quite detailed scripts, you know, when it sort of speaks about Alan Moore's Swamp Thing scripts being very detailed, but there's a lot to these. He lays out an awful lot of it. There's a really great sequence where Swamp Thing grows out of a potted plant, which is worthy of Corbin. It's that beautiful, you know. So I'm really glad I got it. I'm hoping there's going to be sort of a really quality continuation to this, and they're going to keep going with, you know, some quality Swamp Thing product. The only sort of slight irk I've got with it is it's an $8 comic. I don't know whether it's worth $8. I mean, I really enjoyed it. You know, how can you put money on art? But who'll pick it up at that price? It's a bit of a shame. There's a lot of filler in it. I don't think we really needed. There's a lovely pin-up of Len Wein in the back with Swamp Thing behind him and Wolverine. You know, his two sort of big famous creations, and he's sitting at a desk. But for some reason, they put the coloured version, they put the pencil version, they put the ink version in it as three separate pages. And I think, I don't know whether they needed that. There's a nice little tribute to Bernie Wrightson. There's a tribute, and as I said, there's a couple of, well, there's about five pages that are tributes to Len Wein in here as well. They do write by him, but I'm going to say that $8, pardon me, which you're not going to pay far off, $6, $7 over here for it, is a little bit much. But yeah, highly recommended. It's a beautiful story by everyone involved, and well worth a look. That's my one. There you go.
Nice. So my recommendation, buckle in.
Okay. Yeah.
Is one that I just had to talk about. It's from Black Mask Studios, and it is Eternal, a Shield Maiden ghost story. Now, it's written by Ryan K. Lindsay and art by, and I'm sorry if I messed this name up, Eric Zawadzki. I think that's right. And colours by D. Kniff, or Kniff. I'm going to say Kniff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So an Australian writer, a Canadian artist, and an Irish colourist coming together for this story. Now, here's the basic synopsis, which I cut down. A group of isolated shield maidens protect their village against a tide of men who think they can seize land from them. But some battles rage on inside us long after the field is empty, and some opponents won't ever stay down. Eternal is a haunting story of how vulnerable you make yourself when trying to protect everything around you. Let's get this out the way from the get-go. This book is hands down already one of the best books I will read all year.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I've read it. It's good. It is absolutely gorgeous, mate. It really is.
I mean, to say something like that is a bold claim. And we're only 2 short months into 2018. That's already given us on this show some spectacular books, quite a few which we actually picked up at True Believers, which I know I'm going to talk about in upcoming shows. So, yes, it's a bold claim, but I think anyone who reads this will agree with me that there is something truly special about this. It's a one-and-done tale that manages to balance like brutal action, heartbreaking, like truly heartbreaking character drama, and also add a supernatural flavour to it as well. There's so much to talk about. I'm going to try not to spoil anything. The main character of Vif, I think that's how you say it. She's like the shield maiden leader of her clan. I think is an astonishing creation, because like she's strong, sort of powerful, a force of nature, but also like a creature of quite strong emotion.
I mean, she's a beautiful girl. I mean, she reminds me of the one from Vikings. She's got blue eyes, blonde, long blonde hair, you know, but vicious or violent.
She's definitely a mother figure in more than one way, because she has a son in the story, but also she's almost like the mother of the rest of her clan. Like, this is gonna sound weird, but you know, her character almost sort of reminded me of like a female lion. I know that sounds strange, but you know what I mean. Like protective, like ferocious, and like willing to do whatever's needed to like protect the ones underneath her and like her family and stuff. I mean, she was an amazing character, and you are riveted to this character from the beginning to the end, and it is her arc, really. Like I said, I'm going to try and spoil nothing about this book, because to see the story for yourself, to appreciate it as I did, you kind of have to go in not knowing what's in store. Now, I heard a lot of good word about it, but I didn't want to know anything about the story. You know, I saw snippets of artwork which looked beautiful.
I've got to tell you, the cover sold it for me. I love the cover for this.
It's simple. But it says it all, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, it's a really sort of beautiful cover as well. The sort of white of the cover with her charging across it. Yeah. Gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the sort of the visual work on this book is just another level as well. There's truly poignant moments, and much of the book is told without any dialogue at all. Like, there's one page in particular that involves Vif going forth into battle. And like, as her sort of comrades and stuff step forward, she turns round and just merely holds up a hand before like walking on alone into battle. Now that's the way I've said it is a hugely simplistic way of describing it. But when you read the scene, just play out, it's an amazing example of how of allowing the reader to fill in the gaps. So there's so much dialogue on that page without a single speech bubble. Don't you think, Tony?
I'm not winding you up here, mate. The art stylistically reminds me a little bit of yours as well.
Oh, I wish.
I don't know why. It's just a lot of the figure drawing and the faces and stuff. I'm looking at it again now, and I thought about it the first time really, and I can't exactly pin down why, but I don't know. It does remind me a bit of your work, actually.
Yeah, I think this sort of art is definitely something that I could quite easily be influenced by moving forward.
Yeah.
And like, kudos to Ryan for allowing, because it is a collaborative book. But like, some books would force dialogue into scenes, like the one I just described. But Eternal just isn't one of those books. Like that scene I just spoke about there's 13 consecutive pages that contain some of the most heartbreaking emotional moments, followed by brutality that probably wouldn't have been out of place in like a war scene in like Braveheart or something. You know, something really visceral. It does.
But you get as well as the violence, you get little pauses. So there's actually a sort of narration going on, isn't there?
Yeah,
There's one here, and all the while the smug bastard laughs, he pushes the maidens into Fear's pocket. I mean, it's like beautiful, beautifully written stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah. I mean, the artwork by Zawadzki is just absolutely stunning.
Yeah.
I know he's been selling his original pages of this book, I saw on Twitter. If I had the cheddar, I'd get my hands on some. But that's if he hasn't sold them all by now, which he should have, because because every single page is a work of art, and it's only
we'll just plan a robbery after this.
Let's do it. Kudos also to Dee, whose colours I think are an unsung hero.
Some of the flame work and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
really nice.
There's fire and there's snow and there's like just forests. I think he effortlessly sort of adds shade and tone to scenes that they immediately take you to that emotional place. That black and white. I mean, the artwork is probably stunning in black and white, but it just takes to another level. You know, from cold, really bleak, snow-ridden forest to like shades of red, like in like sort of war and battle. It really sort of translate like the madness of like there's and you have these sort of all red panels and it slowly zooms in on characters and you can see like the rage in their eyes and which is but it's not like full on red, they don't overdo it, it's really subtle with the palette that I like really love. It doesn't sort of it nothing about this book like over eggs the pudding, which I think it like elevate the supernatural elements of the story, which sort of sneak in.
I really like Dee's work. He actually colored some of the stuff I did for the WWE stuff. I'm always intimidated by colorists because I'm not into the fancy pantsy special effects-y stuff, you know. And he seemed to get that just by, you know, like he got that idea from just looking at the work. So
yeah,
it's letting
flat colors, you know, knowing that you don't have to do all these effects sometimes.
Yeah, it is,
you know,
isn't it?
A strong color is a strong color. Yeah. You don't have to add anything to it. I just blow me away. Like the work that's just all three of them, I think. Right. I mean, obviously Ryan, we've had him on the show and he's, you know, we're fans of his work. I personally think that his dialogue and narration has never been better. And, you know, surely he's destined to be a big gun for one of those two big publishers within the next 5 years, I imagine.
Yeah,
not that he has to be, of course. He doesn't have to be.
He's an amazing writer. I really like his stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And,
isn't he on the DC Writers Program, I think?
He was.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think... Yeah.
I had a chat with him last week. He's, believe it or not, and he's very kind of him, but he subscribes to my mailer. And I wrote a piece on spending longer looking at a comics page because we're just rushing through them. And he wrote a lovely email back. I had a bit of a chat with him about it. You know, really nice to say, look, we are right. There's a lot to take in on a page. I mean, this is self-evident in this book.
Yeah.
And people need to spend longer looking at this beautiful art. You know, people seem to sort of race to the end of stories these days, you know?
Yeah.
It's just part of society.
Just the really sparky dialogue and just really memorable dialogue. Like there's a scene after like Viff has just taken out like a bunch of people that attack them and she walks into some of her prisoners and it says, I'm furious BR only sent two men. Did he think that's all a bunch of women would need? Your man has no fucking idea. And it just, but that mixed with like the art, you just think, I wouldn't fucking mess with her. It's just awesome. Yeah. So I think the whole thing is next level storytelling. And it's just pure poetry, I think. You know, I was really taken by this book. It's like listening to a fantastic album that just takes you away and you just completely get lost within it. Plus, there's some back matter in the back of the book, which I'm always a fan of anyway. Like there's concept art and layouts from Eric. And there's two actual sort of prose sort of pieces. Well, not necessarily prose, but articles by Ryan and Dee that are fascinating. And I think they perfectly encapsulate how this project was a truly collaborative book.
I need to get a copy of this because Orbital didn't have a copy. Yeah. Bin Planet didn't have a copy. And I've got a digital copy now. And I really need to get it in my hands.
I really want a physical copy. I mean, I bought this on Comixology. I really want a physical copy. Just those bits at the back, you discover that Ryan had written the story as like a shorter 24 pages script.
Right, yeah.
And Eric felt so passionate about it that he just kept creating artwork. And before they knew it, they had a 64 page OGN that just became a beast of its own making. So
he's the guy who worked on Headspace with Ryan, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great book as well. Yeah. I reviewed that a few years ago for Down the Tubes. Yeah. Headspace is a really interesting experiment. Yeah. That I think they both pull off in it, actually. But you can see Eric has stepped up large since then.
Yeah.
You know, really. Not that he's bad, but he's excellent. Yeah,
you can tell these pages, you know, when someone has a labour of love, and it just lets the action sort of speak for itself, and it has this real sort of bounce and rhythm to it that, you know, it's just absolutely marvellous. So you can get it from Comixology, as I said. I think it's £5.49, okay. Which normally I don't spread to that amount for digital, but I was so eager to read this that I had to get it. And like I say, I'm going to double dip. If your local comic book store has it, if they have any left, because this seems to be getting word of mouth like nobody's business.
Yeah.
If you see it, get it, because there really is no other word for it. It's fucking spectacular. And it's already the top of like one of my favorites of 2018, without a doubt. So there you go. And I wrote more notes on this than I normally do, because I wanted to get this right. So there you go.
I would have put money you talked about this one this week.
Yeah.
Got to.
And I think there's going to be a lot of our listeners that have already read it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so they'll probably, hopefully, be agreeing with me. If you don't, you're a fool. anyway, cool. That was a big statement. But yes, thank you. There you go, folks. Plenty of awesome comics talk. Plenty of great books for you to check out. That's one of the things that I've written on the list is Akira, and I've underlined it because I really need. So many people have mentioned that, and I really need to read it properly.
If anyone wants to buy us all that big box set of books, then please feel free.
Yeah, we won't say no. God, look at us, we're disgraceful. Do you think we're disgraceful, people?
I don't know.
Then email us to let us know how disgraceful you think we are. There's several different ways you can do it. You can email awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We've got two emails because we're just gangster. That's how we live.
The least gangster I know of anyone.
you eat Chinese takeaway with a spoon, Tony. That's pretty gangster.
That is true. Yeah.
Our comic's still on sale.
Yes.
So,
digital and hard copies available at awesomecomicpod.bigcartel.com.
They're going fast as well. We've had loads of orders, haven't we?
Yeah. I'm sending out another big batch tomorrow, so if you can get your order in, I don't know. By the time I listen to this, I'll be gone down the post office. But I've been doing almost daily visits to the post office, sending this stuff off. So,
And get your order in now. If you're a comic shop and you want us to send some through, I'm sending some up to Dennis Whittle up in Rochdale tomorrow, and I'm taking some into Orbital later this week. So, if you do run a comic shop and you want some, then let us know. We'll send some up to you as well.
Send an email to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. There you go.
Cool. There you go.
Yeah. Definitely. Thank you to everyone who's bought the issue. And just spreading the word. Thank you very, very much. Yeah. We're very proud of this. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll probably put out some polls and out some guests. Kelly was another cracking guest, and we've got even more guests on the way. Yeah, there's not going to be a Three Amigos show for a little way.
No. Yeah, we're a bit worried about the Three Amigos, because if we do more than two in a row, it begins to get a little bit out of hand, doesn't it?
Yeah, we don't want to talk to each other anymore. Yeah. we're basically like the podcast version of Destiny's Child.
Fucking hell, that's a reference.
Yeah. Thank you. like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join the Facebook. If you do the Facebooks, the Book of the Faces, join the group Awesome Comics Talk, where it's basically just all for creators and fans, just to talk about process, books they love. There's none of this selling nonsense. Actually, have we done a sales post for our comic yet?
We did do one. Yeah, we did.
Oh, did we?
I think I did one. Let's do another one. Fuck them.
Yeah, we're allowed. It's our group. We could stop at any moment. we're like dictators. No, but join that, because it's a great group. Thank you very much for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. It helps get the word out about the show. If you listen to us on all the networks, thank you very much, whether it's Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Sinister Sex Dolls.
Then
that is from Savage Dragon 231. I think Eric Larson is just taking the piss now.
He's doing whatever he wants, isn't he?
It's my favourite comic out. It's fucking nuts. Yeah. Has anyone seen the movie Teeth?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a moment. Yeah. There's a moment like that in it.
Oh my word. Right.
Yeah.
Because before Kelly, when Kelly came on, I was asking that question, what was going on in that Savage Dragon comic?
Yeah.
As he, she biting his...
Yeah. Yeah. The next page, so, she sort of drops it out onto the floor.
Look.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. All right.
Yeah. Kelly's never going to come back on the show again after this. Yeah. Now,
well, where... that was the best intro.
Where can people find us on Twitter, etc., Tony?
Ezo, yes, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z on Twitter. If you go to neveriron-anything.blogspot.co.uk, I've put up quite a detailed preview. There's not really any spoilers in it for Accident Man and a couple of other pieces. Just this weekend, I put four up this weekend. So go and have a read of it. Go and see some of the great images and some of the dialogue, which I've transcribed from the Accident Man movie. It's well worth
nice.
It.
There you go. Nice. What about you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. I did a write-up of the True Believers Comic Con.
Yes, really good, man. Yeah.
Very well
done. Only really scraped the surface, but I think you kind of get a bit of the feeling of the day and how fun it was.
So go check that out. You get that and Dan's amazing comic as well. So there you go.
Oh, thank you.
That's right. You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Kelly, thank you again for joining
us. Thanks, dude.
Cheers, Kelly.
You are welcome back anytime.
Remember us when you're on Man Thing. Yeah. Just say it was down to us. You know it's true. Okay.
That'll be way down the line. So.
Yeah, but we won't forget. Don't ever. We won't forget. Where can people find you on Twitter, etc., wherever?
On Twitter, I am Treebeard. That is beard with two E's, not E-A. And on Instagram, just add a Y. It's Treebeardy. Because Treebeard was already taken. And and you know, I got a website. Treebeardstuff.com. It's been updated very slowly, so you know, you can follow it if you want.
If you followed Kelly's Twitter, you'll see all his artwork and
Twitter is really my website now.
I think that's the same for a lot of people, to be fair. I haven't touched my blog in like probably about 4 years. Tony, don't make this dirty.
I didn't say anything.
Well, you didn't. Yeah, I can read between the lines. Anyway, check out Kelly's stuff and be prepared for him to blow up over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and he's got some artwork for sale on there, which I'm hovering over at the moment. So get on there, buy some. You got some pages for sale as well on there, I think, Kelly, haven't you?
Do I?
I knew you'd say that. Yeah. I knew you'd.
They're gonna discuss it after we sign off.
Look, just about anything I do is for sale. So.
Vince is like that.
I knew that was going to happen. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. Hope you have a brilliant week. From Dan, Tony, Kelly and myself. Read all the comics. Check out some awesome artists. And as always, stay awesome.
Hey, awesome.
See ya.
Bye. That Savage Dragon page, what's happening to that dude? Is he getting his knob eaten or something?
Hang on.
Hello, Kelly. How are you?
Hello, Kelly. I'm good.
Hi, Kelly.
I like it. It's a nice way to come in.